Hi, it's so nice to be with you, Botis with Expert. I have a big honor here to talk and have an expert talk with our dentist, Larissa Steichmann. And, I need to say my colleague or more friend, Larissa Steichmann, that I'm very proud of it, with a topic that is quite interesting now and topic that we are exploring for years and years and try to find the best solutions pretty much. What is very interesting, and our connection came also with your publication, one beautiful publication about socket management. And please, if you can tell just how it was guided, because you have such a style of decision tree for the tip of the sockets. And so this decision tree is what triggers us, what we need to choose, when and how, pretty much.
So thank you very much, first of all, for having me here for the interview. I agree with you that socket management has become one of the most crucial topics that we find around implant dentistry. I think the reason is that socket management is really the prevention, in a sense, that we see for long-term stability around implants. So everything starts the time that we extract the tooth. We can actually prepare and predict a lot in terms of the long-term stability that we see for our implants. So this is probably the background and the idea that we had for the publication. And what we did is that we looked into the literature and we tried to identify the factors that are the most prominent and the most predictable factors in terms of bone loss after tooth extraction, okay? So in this publication, we identified two factors that are extremely relevant. Okay. These two factors are, first, the bone thickness, which is a predictable factor in terms of volume loss that we're seeing in terms of hard tissue loss. And the second factor is bone dehiscences, okay? So how much of the buccal plate is missing at the time of extraction, okay? So we usually measure it in terms of the length of the root. So we have the crestal margin until the apex of the root, and we see how much of that bone is lost in terms of the buccal plate after the extraction. So we see, is it a third? Okay. Is it until two-thirds or more than two-thirds? Okay. And according to that, we then change our treatment approach. So all of these factors we were trying to bring into this classification and then provide practical treatment options. Because at the end of the day, a lot of the times we have classifications where we don't know how to actually treat, right?
Yeah.
So that's usually the problem that we find. So we divided them into three different types of sockets.
Okay.
ST1, okay, socket type 1, socket type 2, and socket type 3.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of my participants always ask me, is ST standing for stigma?
We can use it.
I like it, actually. I never thought about this. It's supposed to be socket type, but I like it that you say stigma. So then we said, okay, first of all, we want to identify how thick our buccal bone is. And we can do that with probing, with a visual assessment, or a CBCT analysis before the extraction, which is, in my opinion, the most elegant way to approach it. ST2 is looking into fenestrations, because a lot of the times the reason for extraction, if they're not periodontal reasons, they're endodontic reasons. So after we have an extraction, we might find a perforation on the more apical aspect. So we have efenestration.
Yeah.
So that's the second diagnosis. And the third diagnosis is ST3, which I just explained. We actually have three different types of severities of degrees of dehiscences. So until a third, one-third to a two-third, or more than two-thirds.
So having walls, compromise, and not having almost like
yes.
not having walls.
Severity, like mild, moderate advance
yeah.
in terms of dehiscences. And so then we provided options on how to identify them. So there are subcategories, okay, mm-hmm. that I just explained. And then treatment options on how to treat these sockets. And really, I would say, why is this so important? Because it gives you the possibility after the extraction to really say, okay, what is my socket diagnosis? Because we always talk about diagnosis, soft tissue diagnosis. Yeah. What's the reason for extraction? What's the what's the patient? And we don't really diagnose our sockets. And I think we should start to diagnose our sockets. Okay.
Yes.
Really identify it.
And if you compare this, what will happen if you don't diagnose properly? We know so many publications out saying about resorption of the bone, losing this socket, losing the volume, losing possibility and aesthetics in that area. So if you don't diagnose it first and don't do the next steps, results can be very bad in the end.
Yes. But people don't realize that at this point, the way that you use your biomaterials, the combinations that you use, and how to actually combine the right bone graft with the right membrane at the time of extraction can have such long-term effects. There is a lot of studies that now come up, actually, that look at long-term stability of implants, that were placed after socket preservation, and we see really, really good outcomes, okay? Because that's the interest. Actually, the main interest that they look into these studies is implant success, right?
Yeah.
It's implant success and the stability of the marginal bone. The concept that people don't understand, why should we use a bone graft at the time of extraction? Why? We need to rebuild and recreate the crestal bone, okay? Yeah. Because we diagnose peri-implantitis on how our crestal bone is being lost in the future, right? So let me give you an example. Aesthetic problems, recessions. Why do we have them? We see a loss of the crestal bone. Okay, pocketing. So we see bleeding around the implants, right? We can have pus. We can have bacteria that are actually accumulating because we have pocketing. This is because we don't have crestal bone around the implant. So we need to create this crestal bone before any implant is placed. Yeah. When would be the best time to do that?
Pretty much at the beginning.
At the beginning. You start in the beginning because when it's already lost, we need to do follow-up surgeries. We have scarring. We have post-trauma. We have, patients need to come for multiple surgeries. There are so many reasons that there's actually other way around. There is no reason why a patient should not have any of these grafting procedures done at the time of an extraction. So that's why it's crucial.
But this is also reasons for you as a clinician to do the treatment before. But if we say and put ourselves in the role of patient, isn't better for him to do the treatment the moment he has extraction?
Absolutely. Also, because the concept that we see around socket preservation is not the same concept that we see around the concept of guided bone regeneration. What's the difference? If we extract a tooth and we do absolutely nothing, we will find bone. We will have a bone regeneration that is physiologically triggered, genetically triggered by our body to rebuild this bone.
It's healing himself somehow.
Healing himself. It's rebuilding bone. It's less bone because we have a resorption, but it's rebuilding bone. So we have the body actually helping us.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? In that moment, I add bone and the body is coming to help me to build this socket, to build this bone, to build everything that is necessary for an implant. Now, what's happening if we already lost that bone and we want to do it in the future, let's say 3 months later, 4 months later? Mm-hmm. Now, if I then add bone, my body is not going to help me. I need to create, as a clinician, ideal conditions, okay, which means primary intention closure, stability, maintenance of the graft.
This path principle.
Exactly. You have to have the path principle perfectly done. Otherwise, you will not have any bone.
Yeah.
So the body's not going to help you. Okay. Because at that moment, it's not something that comes naturally to the body. I try to force my body to build bone.
Yeah.
But actually, my body is not genetically triggered at this point to build this bone. So that's another reason why it's so crucial that we have this socket management, because the socket management means right now I have such a potential, genetic potential, physiologic potential of my body to help me to recreate this bone.
But why so many clinicians don't do socket preservations? And it's still now, after so many publications, science supporting all your words, and in the end, your research also support the same wording, how it's possible that they still doesn't do preservation in that time?
I think that a lot of the concepts come from practical reality, okay? What does it mean? I cannot always guarantee an outcome, and I can try to work with what is good enough in that moment. If we find ourselves in a clinic and we need to explain to our patients, we're going to do a grafting, and maybe we will need to do grafting again, and we don't really know how much we're going to lose, we're going to get, because we can't have these conversations really with the patients that we say, so maybe we will have, you know, 10% less of resorption, but we still need to add 20% extra, and then you need to do it again and again. And we try to avoid to have these conversations. So people say, if I actually have a very wide ridge, why should I add bone? Because at the end, with what I will find, I will manage. And if it's not enough, I will do what is necessary at that point. It is not trying to think from a preventative point of view.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like prevention. It's like if I tell somebody, if you go and eat healthy and work out every day today, you will be in a better position. And people say, no, you know, it will be fine. If I will have a problem, I will go to the doctor. I will take a pill. I will deal with it then.
Tell people,
no. If you do something today, it will be better. I don't know. I cannot promise you that everything will be fine and you'll be very healthy. You find this pattern everywhere in life, right? Yeah. Prevention is not something that we love to do, but it's very clear that it's beneficial.
Of course.
There is no reason.
But with so many research that you did, I think you find very nice solutions for each of these three sockets. And with this solution, it comes quite science behind why you strictly chose these solutions. So just slightly socket Steichmann type one, socket type one. What did you choose as a perfect solution for it? You really have all intact walls, very thick walls, and like perfect solution that it's not so common. But if you have a perfect solution, what is your go-to reason or result?
Okay, so usually we have a subcategory. It depends if we have a thick or a thin buccal bone. So in the cases that we have a thick buccal bone, we have a strong osteogenetic potential from the body. And sometimes we can just have a color cone placed inside the socket that will help with the homeostasis and keep the blood clot in place. Okay? The moment we're having a thin buccal bone, we know that we have higher bone resorption in the future. That's the moment we need to start to add bone substitutes. Okay? So we don't need to add any sort of membranes at this point, but we need to combine the bone substitutes with basically a seal. So the color cone, any collagen product can be placed as a seal of the socket.
Okay.
Usually you want to actually fill the socket until 1 to 2 millimeter below the crestal bone, because all the buccal bone is intact. And then you just place a collagen cone on top to seal everything and suture the bone graft into place.
And what is your go-to bone?
So for me, it is always what I love to work with now, is a bone graft that gives me basically a good intrasurgical handling, okay? Mm-hmm. So what I love to work with is the sticky bone, especially for sockets, okay? So the bone graft that you can have basically combined almost as the ball that you need to fit into the socket is giving me the least of a headache, right?
Okay.
So what is amazing is that now that I love to, or I actually only work with all the products with hyaluronic acid in combination, right? Because this hyaluronic acid is not only going to give me, in terms of the healing potential, a better outcome in terms of proliferation of the cells, in terms of healing potential of the bone graft, accumulating more, attracting more cells and having helping us in terms of hard and soft tissue healing. But actually what's really nice is that intrasurgically, I can get the sticky bone that I need perfectly prepared just to stick into my socket. Because what I found myself feeling or having trouble with in the past is that the bone graft would be all over, okay? And the patient would feel it. I would feel like I'm not working very clean. So the combination that we find now with the bone grafts. Now, if we talk about the types of bone grafts, I believe in one concept that is extremely important. If you have the availability for an allograft like MaxGraft, I think that the combination with MaxGraft, with a xenograft like Cerabone, is always the best solution.
Okay.
Why? Cerabone is going to give you a volume stability over time. It's maybe not going to be resorbed as much by the body, and it's not going to have such an overturn, okay? But it will give us the stability. If you add it together with MaxGraft, you will have the best of both worlds, okay?
Mm-hmm. Like a combo, pretty much your perfect combo.
Exactly. Yeah. You have an osteoinductive potential, so you have cell differentiation, great bone turnover, but you also have the volume stability. So you actually combine both of them together. In my opinion, you will always have the best outcomes. When is it extremely important? If you're working in the aesthetic zone,
yeah,
okay? If you find yourself extracting a premolar or even a molar, I think if you just use one type of bone graft, okay, it's sufficient. But the moment that you actually switch into the aesthetic zone, this combination to actually have volume stability together with an osteoductive potential, it's the best combination.
Because pretty much bone resorbs and remodulates through your whole life.
Exactly.
So it's like a organ, we say. So having something that will still have these bones in the bones that are not resorbing, gives stability, is what you then searching for in that
and
area.
It's what you need. Because you, I always say, you place an implant, you have the prosthetic rehabilitation of the site, and then that's when the problem starts. The patient goes home. After 1 year, the patient comes back and says, I already see something. You say, no, don't worry. It will be fine. Then the patient comes back after 3 years. Mm-hmm. And we as dentists, we don't move. It's not like I'm moving countries or offices.
You will find your practice.
He will find you. The patient will find you and say, you did this. And now I start to see something gray.
Yeah.
And you know that you can control this from the beginning by placing a volume stable bone graft like Cerabone in that socket. And like I said, ideally in a combination.
I want to ask you also when we have, so we were talking about ideal situations, but if we go further and we have some compromised walls or even not having walls, we have problems there. Because we don't have some potential from biological point of view, like you said, endost will build up the bone. But what is then go to your reasons?
So now we're entering the more compromised socket. So we're entering the classification, the ST3 direction, okay? Where we have three subcategories, A, B, and C, depending on the severity. Now these cases start to become more challenging because we need to rebuild the missing wall, okay?
Completely.
Yes. Yeah. Because usually we have a very strong osteogenic potential. If we have four walls, we know that we have actually cells coming from all sides helping us, okay, to rebuild the bone. The moment it is missing, that's exactly where we need it, exactly on the buccal aspect where we have always the aesthetic problems. We need to actually rebuild this wall, okay? This is the moment we enter the era or the use of membranes, Okay, we have different type of membranes and depending on the type of severity. So you can use collagen membrane for less severe sockets where you have just a missing part of the socket, okay? And if not, you need to start to use non-resorbable membranes. And this is where I love to work with PermaMem.
Oh, okay.
Why? PermaMem is extremely moldable. It's when you try to hold the PermaMem membrane, I feel like you have a paper that is, you know, that you can move like this, right? And I can exactly adjust it to the socket that I want, covering up all the socket, tunneling it lingually, and advancing it all the way, covering my buccal aspect, okay? And it's not going to accumulate a lot of bacteria over time, which is usually all the problems that we're seeing. And because we're working around sockets, we don't need primary closure like we need it with any other type of bone grafts. So with the soft tissue and with the closure, we're having already exactly the anatomy that we want for the future. And we have the PermaMem membrane keeping everything in place.
Yeah.
Now, let's think one step further. What else could I want that is extremely volume stable, that stays exactly in the place where I want it, and is not going to need to be covered, right?
Yeah.
This would be
idea. Yeah.
So this is what I would want.
Socket, another socket management.
Yeah, this would be my goal, right?
Yeah, of course.
This would be my goal, to have something that is extremely volume stable, that stays exactly in place, that is rigid, but now it would be also resorbed.
Yeah, perfect. Because then, yeah, to not open it or not cut in soft tissue to remove something, because PermaMem is non-resorbable.
But still great in terms of bacteria adhesion over time. If you give the correct patient instruction, patient management, it's very, very important.
We did even a study comparing Cytoplasmin and PermaMem, and we figured out, and we were calculating diversity in bacteria. We have such a less of diversity of bacteria and accumulation. Of course, you know, one bacteria comes, then the other, and then they spread like in pieces. It's really on PermaMem. It's like it's blue and it stays like that.
You can see it. All the patients come back
without plug on it, and it doesn't stick even to the bone. It doesn't stick to the soft tissue. So you take it like.
Even if you need to remove it after 6 weeks when you have osteoid formation, it's perfect. That's why I say that I love it, because I don't need any support. I don't need any titanium reinforcement. That's not what we're looking for when we're working around sockets. We're working to rebuild and just to keep that area of the buccal dehiscence or the buccal wall, like to rebuild this missing part that we have lost. We don't need to rebuild everything like we do in guided bone regeneration. We have different requests for the membrane. And this is why, in my opinion, the PermaMem is so ideal. But what I try to tell you is that now, what I love so much is that now that we have the availability of the socket shield, okay, of the magnesium shield, okay, to build this socket shield, for me, was a game changer.
This is where our journey came, because we are, as botists, we try to listen clinicians all the time. And this is how we learn. We listen your needs. We try to address them from the scientific point of view of biomaterials. And this is how the journey with magnesium start. It was a long journey. But when it came, and then it came with a focus with the socket, we figure out that we change technique, outcome, results, and possibility, just because we change and we have something that is completely different. And this is where our connection will start to be better, best friends, because you wrote so many publications on the topic of it, because you fell in love somehow.
Yes.
So can you tell me a little bit about this shield that we have now?
Yes. It's exactly what I was describing, is what did we need? What did we need? We needed something that we can place inside or tunnel under our soft tissue that is extremely volume stable, so that keeps all the bone graft in place, that basically replaces my buccal bone, right? That I just replace in terms of build new,
You make a new
I make new. I put something inside that looks like my buccal bone and that I don't have to remove, because when we work with non-resorbable membranes, we have to monitor the patients very closely. And we it's not that we don't sleep good, but it's we know, oh, I have this patient that's coming into my office. Hopefully nothing happened. Hopefully nothing happened. If I have a membrane that is resorbable, okay, that is volume stable, that my body recognizes in a way, right? Because at the end of the day,
we are talking about magnesium.
We're talking about magnesium. Yeah. We try to take magnesium, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's something that our body is familiar with. I feel better. It is from a surgical point of view, fulfilling all of my requirements, and it's giving me a peace of mind, and it's resorbable, right?
Of course.
So all of these years we were looking for something that is volume stable, but is resorbable. But we never actually could combine it, because with the collagen membranes we were compromising a bit on the volume stability, and with the non-resorbable membranes we were compromising on, you know, second intervention, you know, being a bit hesitant in terms of patient management. And now this is the ideal situation. So in terms of socket, you know, the magnesium shield is exactly in the perfect size, just inserted to where I need it. My bone graft can be placed. I don't have to do any soft tissue management. So I don't have to be concerned about closing the flap, because we're talking about sockets. There is no need for primary closure because we're working in the field of socket management, of alveolar ridge preservation, and not in the field of guided bone regeneration. So no need of primary closure. Just to fit it, to put my bone graft in the right combination that I just mentioned to you, how I like it, and to suture the site.
Because when we are talking about comparison with any kind of collagen in it, and you were talking about tunneling permamen and everything, I think tunneling something rigid, you always know where you come. You come to the root, to the apex of it, you know with shield that you came for it. And in the end, it gives this convexity, like you said, it provides the stability and provides the space for this bone to be grown.
Exactly.
So this is, but also there are quite lots of science behind magnesium. It's already present in cardiovascular, in orthopedics. So it's well, well known, I think, and how it influences, especially how it influences on bone growth. So for you to have something like synthetic as an option and have it with magnesium, do you think this magnesium has some effect really on the whole regeneration?
Definitely. I mean, you can, like you said, there's so many supportive effects that we're seeing. Not only this, we're also having antibacterial effects, right, in the degradation of the membrane. So this is also something that you have to keep in mind, because we're having an open socket, right? So we're working with an open environment where we have a bacterial infiltration. So not only from everything that you just mentioned, also from that aspect of having an antibacterial effect in the degradation process, I think also this is extremely, extremely important. And of course, how would we not prefer something like something inherent in comparison to something artificial? Always, that would be the choice. Right? So it's supporting, it's antibacterial, and it's supporting the bone growth. So I think all effects of it are, there's nothing that I don't feel comfortable with. But really, from a clinical point of view, like from a scientific point of view, it's very clear. But from a handling point of view is really what I always try to explain, that it makes such a difference, because you have something that is prepared in size, that is exactly doing the job of what you need, and you just place it and it does everything else for you, right? So it makes just the life of a clinician easier. And because it is magnesium, everything else that comes after it, it does by itself, right? I don't need to control the environment. This is what I mean with a non-resorbable membrane. You need to control the environment. What suture material did I use? How's the patient cleaning the side? Is it moving? Is the membrane in
place? Oh, yeah. Micro-movements.
Right? Micro-movements. Yeah. And the membrane staying in place. All of these aspects. So with the magnesium shield, I have everything in place.
and I don't have to worry about everything that comes after.
So we are talking about flapless, no fixation solution. You not fixate shield. So no. The procedure goes that you extract the tooth,
yes.
Clean the area.
Yes.
And how you then perform? Just detach the soft tissue?
And then, you know, yeah, can hold.
Yes.
You know? Yes, exactly. Just basically tunnel the soft tissue and then insert it in between your mucoperiosteal flap and the bone. And you just want to make sure that you're, with any type of membrane, going 2 millimeter past the defect. Oh. That's the rule for any membrane that you're using, okay? You want to be on native bone. You don't want to stop directly there. But automatically, with the membrane, if you know the size, the adhesions that you're having, you're measuring with your probe, you're measuring the membrane, you do 2 millimeter plus, it's usually already comes in the right size, you just tunnel it inside, and that's it.
Thank you.
It's just from a practical point of view, I think that's what we're looking for at the end of the day, right? Because let's say the science, we proved already. We know what's working. We know the benefits. And now the clinicians usually ask, how fast? How can I do it? What do I need to do? Just stick it inside? Perfect. Can I go home after? Yes. You have very little headache. Amazing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This is what I'm looking for. So
I also want to ask you about the question. Immediacy now starts to be such a boom, and I'm not so familiar with this as a clinical view. So immediacy is not possible in every case, isn't it? So how then Shield comes in that area of immediacy? When do you do immediacy, or do you do immediacy?
Yes, of course I do immediacy. Mm-hmm. I think immediacy is, let's call it a tool. Okay, let's call it a tool for now. It's an amazing tool, something to have in your toolbox. Okay? Something that you have in the back of your mind that is possible to do at the time of extraction. Usually it requires very meticulous planning. Okay? And there should never, ever, ever be any prosthetic compromise. Okay? This is the two rules in terms of immediacy, in my opinion, okay? Meticulous planning, understand what you're doing. So it means that you know exactly where you need to position your implant. And number two, it needs to be prosthetic in the correct position. If you feel that you need to prosthetically compromise your positioning, so for example, not placing it in the correct cingulum position, you need to abort mission and go with socket grafting. Now,
but patients like immediacy. I think they come in office with a tooth to extract and immediately go out with a tooth. It will be perfect.
And they come to you saying, I heard.
I heard.
I heard it's possible. Can you do it? So already the pressure is on, right? They expect you. They expect you to provide immediacy.
Yeah.
And you should. You should. But you should also explain that it has to be an ideal indication to do it. And if I see that I am able to do it, you should be doing it. Now, in terms of understanding the biological principle, what's very, very important is that when we talk about immediacy, we're placing an implant in an extraction socket, right? Yeah. So we're dealing here with the same biological principles that we did with alveolar ridge preservation, okay? Everything is exactly the same. Our body is going to react exactly the same. Sometimes people think, oh, if I'm going to place an implant, I'm not going to have bone resorption. No, you're going to have exactly the same biological cascade that you would have. So the principles that we just talked about for ridge preservation, they also apply for immediacy. Okay? So if I see that I can place my implant in the correct prosthetic position, I planned everything correctly, and I was able to remove all of the granulation tissue, right? Okay. So I don't feel like there is any infectious tissue left. You can go ahead with immediacy. And then you continue with the same protocol that you would find before. And exactly that, like you, because you just asked about the socket shield, even better just to place a membrane on the buccal aspect that is missing, filling the remaining space with bone, and just covering the site with a suture, or if you want, even with a collagen colocone on top, just to kind of have a seal on the side, but nothing more than that. So you're combining everything together. There is no contraindication to do it, to combine all the barrier materials together in conjunction with the implant, except for you don't have the right indication to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So it all goes back. I always would say that socket preservation or alveolar ridge preservation, which is more the correct term, is a more biological principle that we need to understand. We have a reduction of hard tissue. We have an increase of soft tissue. We want to counteract it. So we want to use a combination of biomaterials to maintain my socket. If we move to the field of immediacy, it's more of a prosthetic question. Okay?
Yes.
Can I place my implant in the correct prosthetic position? Can I actually plan correctly from the beginning, have a good digital workflow, go have a good flow in terms of placing my implants? Did I remove all of my granulation tissue? Okay. So I can place my implant in combination with my biological principles. But this is usually what I would always give as a guideline, I would say, that ridge preservation is a more biological principle. Okay, we're trying to preserve. And immediacy is more of a prosthetic principle. Will I have my implant in the correct position? Yes, you can go ahead and do it. Plus, of course, primary stability. But primary stability is just the okay at the end, the check at the end that you placed everything, you did everything correctly, and then you say, oh, and it's stable.
And go-to bone, you said you fulfill always the gap. Mm-hmm. What is the go-to bone in fulfilling a gap in the situation of immediacy in your case?
I would probably go for a volume stable, so for Cerrabone. I would probably go for Cerrabone in these areas because we want to maintain the space, which is usually a more compromised space or a smaller space in the area. And the idea should be to have something that stays in place and that is volume stable over time. So Cerrabone would be my go-to in this case.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.